Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly, and in this weekly segment, we speak to BBC journalists about the international stories they're tracking in the week ahead. Today, we welcome back Audrey Tinlin, senior journalist at the BBC. Audrey, good to have you with us.
Good to be here again. Hi.
Hi, Audrey. So let's start off with a COVID update, because more countries are seeing their people become vaccinated against COVID-19. So the idea of a COVID passport to allow people to move around the world is catching on fast. This week, the European Union will discuss how that might work. Audrey, could COVID-19 passports work?
Well, a lot of countries are hoping so. But as you were saying, you know, just looking at a sort of COVID update as well, unfortunately, in the week when, again, the EU is going to be bringing this up when finance ministers meet, they're also experiencing a new wave of coronavirus in quite a few countries. You know, I'm no doubt you're reporting already, and people will know that Italy in particular just today is imposing a new lockdown on most of the country. So there is, you know, there's still suffering there, and the vaccine rollout on the European continent is slower than a lot of the governments want to see. So what the plan is, that there would be some sort of app, some sort of passport that you could show, which would show either your vaccine status or whether you've recently had a test, or even whether you've recently recovered from coronavirus, so that this would allow people within the EU to start off with move around within the European Union bloc over the summer, just to get the travel industry going again, for example.
So what's likely to happen in Europe then with the COVID passports? I mean, here in Singapore, there's been a lot of discussion about the IATA travel pass. What could happen in Europe?
Yeah, as you say, there are lots of different plans floating around at the moment, aren't there? The industry wants to go ahead with this IATA travel pass, but then countries individually in Europe, this is what they're talking about. They're calling it a so-called digital green pass, and it would apply within the European Union countries of 27 nations. A lot of the countries in southern Europe particularly are pushing for this, because those are countries, you know, Spain, Greece, where a large part of their income comes from tourism, and they want to get these tourists back. But there are other countries, Belgium, for example, has protested that this passport might discriminate in favour of those people who've had a vaccine, and people who haven't been able to get a vaccine even, or don't want to or can't take a vaccine, they could be discriminated against. So, you know, we're hearing these arguments again and again over how it would work. And some countries are sort of going it alone. I mean, France is talking about a so-called health pass, just for within its own borders, which would allow a person who's been fully vaccinated, example, to eat out in restaurants and attend events, because all governments and countries are trying to get industry and travel going again. But people are still very, very wary of another outbreak, meaning everything would close again.
And just as we're talking about getting people back to travel and rebooting tourism, there are still a lot of employers and governments that want people to get back into the office, aren't they? And I understand there are developments in Switzerland on testing. Can you give us an update on what's happening there?
Yeah, this is an initiative which is being rolled out across the country in Switzerland. Starting today, this week, they're going to start giving people tests. Home testing kits that they can take home and do themselves. It's a country of 8.6 million people, and they're just starting to come out of their second lockdown. Sort of tentatively, they still have cases, but they're starting to reopen bars, restaurants, gyms, theatres. And the idea is that everybody will be given five kits a month, and they will test themselves. The government will pay for it, and that's going to cost over $1 billion this year alone. It's a lot of money, but Switzerland feels this is the way to get people back to work. If they have a clear test, they can go back to work, still with restrictions in place over, you know, sanitary sort of movements within the office to make sure everything's very clean, all the rest of the restrictions we are so familiar with now. But they want to get things started.
And talking about the cost of testing, let's talk about finances, because many European countries are still struggling with rising rates of coronavirus, as you mentioned earlier, and their finances have been struggling too. And this week, European Union finance ministers are meeting. What's likely to be their main focus, Audrey?
Yeah, they're holding this virtual meeting, of course, hosted by Brussels, and this is really, at the moment, it's a sort of it's a talking meeting. They're not going to make final decisions. There's a European summit later in the month where a lot of these things will go forward to. And they're talking again about the European Union's recovery and resilience package. This is this huge fund that they put together. It's taken months to put it together, and it's designed to hand out $375 billion in grants and a similar amount in low-interest loans. That's a six-year program for the 27 member countries. And what happens is that individual countries have to bid for this money to get a share of it to spend on their industry and to move forward. So there's more talking about how exactly this will work and how it will be rolled out.
And that's no small change, Audrey, but still, not all European Union countries are happy about the way that the rollout of stimulus is taking place. Can you give us an update on who's complaining?
Yeah, you're seeing complaints from some countries who don't like the way that the strings are attached. This fund isn't just going to be handed out to anybody who asks. Most of it is attached to what the EU calls green stimulus. They want to see environmentally friendly policies, policies that move towards zero carbon. They're going to fund for that. It's called a next generation fund. But the other thing is they're looking at democratic standards in countries. And this is a bit where a couple of countries in particular, Hungary and Poland, have said that they object to this and that, you know, that it shouldn't be tied to what goes on in an individual country with the way that they choose to run things. Hungary and Poland have got more right-wing governments than some of the other countries. So there's a you know, there's likely to be a court battle over this, actually. It's going to be decided in the European courts over whether this will be one of the strings. So that's holding things up somewhat. And the EU and other countries are keen to get this rolled out. Some countries, Spain, for example, have already started sort of working on the basis that they're going to be getting this money and coming up with plans how to get their economy back.
And speaking of getting the economy back and workers back in the office, while many of us are still working remotely, the pandemic has seen many online companies do really well. I'm sure you've done a bit of online shopping yourself there, Audrey. And while many people have been confined to their homes, I mean, the European Union is also looking at how to tax digital companies. We're talking big firms like Amazon, Google, Facebook. But why is it taking so long to introduce these new taxes?
Yeah, it does feel like we've been talking about this for a very long time, doesn't it? Even before the pandemic, there was a move, obviously, by many countries, and the EU was leading that move, if you look around the world, to try to tax some of these companies, most of which are big American companies, of course. It's taking a while because even within the EU, there's no specific agreement about how that would work. And then there is a separate agreement run by the OECD. They're trying to come up with a sort of overall overarching global plan on this tax, and the EU is acknowledging that it would be better if everybody could make an agreement so that, and including the US, over how these companies will be taxed. But that's what's holding everything up. What sort of speed should you move at, and how exactly are you going to tax? You know, is it going to be a tax on revenues? Is it going to be a tax on digital transactions? It's taking a while. And in the meantime, we've seen other countries which, like France, have moved unilaterally to impose these sorts of taxes. And it does appear that, going forward, there could be more of that because governments are hearing from their indigenous, local businesses how much they're suffering from these high streets which are seeing closed shops while people are buying online. That's a shift that's probably not going to go away, but the governments and companies want to see the tax structures change to reflect that.
We're speaking with Audrey Tinline, senior journalist at the BBC. And Audrey, moving away from COVID-19 updates now, and in big international news this week, we've got the world's most important relationship between the US and China. We've got high-level talks between the two sides happening in Alaska. Are we likely to see a change in the way the US treats China now that President Trump has gone? He was famously antagonistic to Beijing.
Yeah, we've all been watching this, haven't we? And I'm sure your listeners as much as anyone, this relationship and how it's shaping up. And this week's going to be a very key moment, just in terms of, you know, what comes out of it, how it appears. And the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, is going to sit down with Chinese counterparts in Alaska on U.S. soil and trying to take the initiative there. And already, really, the signs that we've seen coming out from the Biden administration are so far not much change, but they're doing, as you know, this review into their relationship with China and how they're going to deal with China. Antony Blinken's already said to a House committee in Washington that there isn't any intent, he said, for this to be the first in a series of engagements. There's no intent at this point for a series of follow-on engagements with China. And specifically what he said is that these engagements, meaning sit-downs between the two countries, if they're to follow, they've got to be based on tangible progress and tangible outcomes. So, as you know, the U.S. is pushing China on a number of things to do with regional security, to do with human rights violations, which it sees against the Uyghurs and has been complaining to China about. So a lot to come out of this, possibly, but at the moment it's going to be each side probably stating their case, isn't it, and just putting forward how they want to see the relationship.
Well, Audrey, thank you for joining us again and for all of those updates.
Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Audrey Tinline, senior journalist at the BBC, right here on Prime Time on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.